Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Happy days where people run wild through aisles are here again. You can thank ABC for that via the return Sunday night of the iconic game show Supermarket Sweep with Leslie Jones hosting. Executive producer Alicia Rossiter and Wes Cobble join me next live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive. How do you move diversity on TV to the next level? Well, we'll get some ideas later this hour from noted strategist Steve Levine. And we'll check out a new plumbing service from Chicago, Bon.TV, in our final 30 minutes with Chief Executive Melody Cooper. Now, also ahead, MIPCOM moves forward in 2020, our classic trivia segment, and time for the great adventure to reboot this. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very happy Columbus Day 2020 to you, and welcome once again to the program about TV's current and future. 53 degrees at the top of the hour. It's quite cool because we're getting the remnants and the raindrops as we speak from Hurricane Delta that pummeled the Louisiana coastline before the weekend. We're happy to have you aboard. We have a great lineup of people over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to always be part of the program. Or take the phone call from you to make the phones ring at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is available to you right now if you're shy about the phone. It's SimonApple04 by name. It's SimonApple04 by name. And you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. It's so simple. Just click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker to screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Our duo from Supermarket Sweep will be live with us in a few minutes. But first, we've got some news notes and quite a few for you. One of the world's top TV programming marketplaces started a few hours ago on the other side of the Atlantic. MIPCOM, the annual Oktoberfest usually happening in Cannes, is virtual for the first time. The event is expected to kick off several new series commitments for global sale and produce international distribution for a number of U.S. series. Among the first deals, PBS landing a revival of popular British series All Creatures Great and Small for Masterpiece Theatre in 2021. The event takes place throughout the week, and we will have episodes Wednesday and Friday, and any developments that happen between now and the rest of the week, we'll bring them to you on our Wednesday and Friday edition. And now we have a big group of quickies for you. Keira Knightley is out as star of the upcoming Apple TV Plus series, The Ethnic Serpent. Family reasons related to the coronavirus pandemic in England is the cause. Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and Apple TV will present Dionne Warwick's live Las Vegas concert, What the World Needs Now is Love, Friday night. Season 2 of Pennyworth takes off December 13th on Epix. Another Season 2 kickoff is Dark Materials, November 16th on HBO. Phineas and Ferb co-creator Dan Poppenmeyer is set to create his next tune for Disney Channel, titled Hamster and Gretel. Yes, it's about a woman, pet hamster, and all the adventures they get into. More My Little Pony on the way to Discovery Family next month. Pony Life features new characters, magic, and believe it or not, frosted cupcakes. More news in the actor dropout department. Jamie Dornan is out as the title character in Peacock series Dr. Death, adapted from the popular True Crime podcast. Joshua Jackson has assumed the role. Former ESPN Sunday Night Baseball analyst and Hall of Famer Joe Morton died yesterday in California. He was 77. Elon Musk's SpaceX Enterprise will be developed as a miniseries for HBO and or HBO Max. Channing Tatum will be among the executive producers. And finally, Showtime will bring Brooklyn's Flatbush section to comedic life next year with half-hour series Flatbush Misdemeanors. 10 episodes are planned. And that is news notes for today. Before we get to our guest from Supermarket Sweep, let's bring our classic trivia question to life for you. Well, we focused on a big question over the last 2 weeks devoted to Entertainment Tonight's 40th anniversary, and unfortunately, nobody got it. So as a result, we're going to keep our prizes that were in play, Becoming Ginger Rogers, the book about how ballroom dancing made me a happier woman, better partner, and smarter chief executive officer from Verb L. Brooks, plus the book Constant Comedy from former Comedy Central senior vice president and former guest in this program, Art Bell, last month, and the trio of Fish Tank Kings episodes from Nat Geo Wild. The question we had for you over the last 2 weeks Name two of Entertainment Tonight's three original co-hosts back in 1980-1981. The answer, Ron Hedren, Tom Halleck, and Marjorie Wallace. And of the three, Ron was the longest running of the original co-hosts, lasting 3 years. Halleck and Marjorie Wallace only lasted 1 year. So those are the answers to our previous classic trivia question. Ron Hedren, Tom Halleck, Marjorie Wallace, they were the three Entertainment Tonight original hosts when the show premiered 40 years ago. So that's our last classic trivia question. So now let's bring a new one on board with the same prizes in play. And here it is. In the course of his career, the great actor Henry Fonda starred in two weekly television series, one during the 1960s, the other during the 1970s. Name one of them. Again, actor Henry Fonda starred in two weekly television series over the course of his career. One was during the 1960s, the other in the 1970s. Name one of them. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address when you give the answer. And if you have already won before, let somebody else give a shot. It'll make them feel happy, and so will you too. So once again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, give us the answer, your name, and your mailing address, so that if you win, we get the prize back to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So give it a go, and all the very best. When we come back, our dynamic duo from Supermarket Sweep, Alicia Rossiter, and Wes Sobel will join us live from L.A. But first, we're going to pause for a great message from the fine folks at Audible.com, part of Amazon.com. If you're looking for a very inspirational book these days, try this one by a man named Jay Shetty. Way back when, Shetty decided to become a monk. That's right, spent time in India in a monastery. And then the monastery people said, hey, you're learning so much here, why not share with the rest of the world? And he's done so in a new audiobook called Think Like a Monk. And it's well worth the listening, especially with Jay Shetty doing the narration. Well, you can get that book right now if you become a trial member to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration, too. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. What you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook. You get some health and wellness information as well, and the trial is 1 month, and it's free. And by the way, if you're an Amazon Prime customer already, make that two audiobooks you get, and if you subscribe for over a year, you save 50% on the yearly price. Also, you also get the opportunity, whether you go for one book or two, to pick from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's everything from original audio productions and podcasts, I might add, plus great Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater from around the country, and one-woman, one-man performances. How about that for a deal? And by the way, an Audible subscription makes a great gift for you or someone you love today on Columbus Day or anytime. And don't forget, we've got the big holiday gift season ahead and Amazon Prime Day, too. So how about making audibletrial.com a place to go for a great gift for you or someone you love? So once again, for that free audiobook or two, also, health and wellness information, and that one-month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent Amazon, is audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You certainly won't regret it. Back in the mid-1960s, I should say, an ad man by the name of Al Howard came up with an interesting idea. What if teams of contestants would be in an actual supermarket and get seconds to use and sweep up all the cat merchandise and food they could do so in a certain amount of time? Well, that idea was translated into a series that was daytime on ABC called Supermarket Sweep, and it turned out to be a big success. The shows were taped at food fair supermarkets up and down the East Coast, including New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and down in Florida, all up and down the coast. Bill Malone was the host. The show was produced by David Susskind, and jazz great Dave Brubeck provided a fun theme song. The show ran for several years on ABC. 11 o'clock was the usual time, weekday mornings. And then, in the 1990s, Howard revived the show for Lifetime, and it turned out to be a smashing success. How much smashing? The show ran for 5 years in original production, and then when it went off the air, reruns continued on Lifetime for another few years because the ratings were so good. The show was hosted by David Rubeck. The setting went to a Hollywood production studio, which weekly in the supermarket with all the aisles you wanted, and all sorts of bonuses too. And the show just had a ball with a lot of contestants. The show was so popular, even with the Lifetime reruns, that Tax TV picked it up, with Rubeck continuing as the host for several more years. It's been about 16, 17 years since the final Tax TV episodes, and ever since, people have been wondering, when will Supermarket Sweep ever come back? This Sunday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Pacific Time, it does, on the network that gave it birth in the first place, ABC, with Leslie Jones as the host. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, two of the key executive producers of the series, Alicia Rossiter and Wes Coble. Alicia and Wes, okay, you're on. Alicia and Wes, you're on. Go ahead. I hold up for a second. All right, Alicia and Wes, can you hear me? Or can we hear you? All right, hold on for a second. Let's give it one more try. Out there. All right, Alicia and Wes, are you there? All right, we're going to give them another couple minutes. I know they're on the way, so hang in with us. And if you got a question or comment for Alicia and Wes, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Supermarket Sweep, by the way, premieres, as I said, at 8 p.m. Pacific time on your local ABC station with Leslie Jones as the host, taped in Los Angeles by Fremantle, the folks behind The Price is Right, Card Sharks, Match Game, Pressure Luck, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, let's see if we can get Alicia and Wes up and running. Let's try one more time. Alicia and Wes, are you there? Hello, hello. All right, we're going to give them another couple of minutes to get on. I know they're going to get on soon, sooner or later, and they will get on soon. Just so you know, our show, for those of you that are joining us, is on every Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. Our podcasts are now on Amazon Music, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple TV, also at iTunes, Spreaker Podcast, and TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. So if you can't catch us live, do catch us on replay at any of those web podcast destinations. All right, let's see if Alicia and Wes are on.
We are
Alicia
here.
Wes, hello.
We're here.
There we go. Okay, you're on.
Hello, Simon.
Hello, Wes. Hi, Alicia.
Great to be here.
Same here. And we gave you the okay, you're on from the Lifetime version of the show, whether Johnny Gilbert or Randy West would say that. So we were in the mood for it.
Perfect.
Alicia, we'll start with you. Before you...
Hold on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wes. I'm sorry.
No, that I just I'm really impressed. You know both of the announcers from the old sweep. That's amazing.
I would watch that every day. I used to watch the original version back in the '60s, as well as the Lifetime version. And Alicia, I'll start with you. A lot of people, I mentioned before you came on, a lot of people are waiting 16, 17 years for the show to come back. Have you heard from that multitude? Like, you know, we're so thrilled that it's birthed back and on the network that gave it birth in the first place.
That's our greatest privilege, is that we're here to bring back a show that was already loved. You know, I think BuzzFeed did some sort of survey a couple of years ago across all TV shows. What was the number one show that people wanted a reboot of? Supermarket Sweep. So when Wes and I got selected to run this, we were beyond thrilled.
Wes, why do you think Supermarket Sweep has had the reputation it's had? It's like you can't get enough of it, no matter when you saw it.
I think the reason for that is because it's just got that little bit of craziness to it that you don't really see on any other game show. Like, you rarely – there's no other game show where people are running through a supermarket throwing frozen turkeys into a shopping cart, right? And it's something that, as viewers, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, and, you know, as it's kind of progressed these past 20 years, it's something you as a kid wanted to go do yourself. And I think that's what's made the passion kind of live all the way up until 2020.
And Alicia, you have as host somebody who actually did apply to be on the Lifetime version, Leslie Jones, didn't get on, and this is sort of like, as she said in the interview, it's her sweet revenge to host the show.
isn't it the best? I mean, I think that often when these game shows get rebooted, there's a big long discussion about who should be the host, and then you find a host and you teach that host the show, and they're not, you know, they're learning it as the audience is learning it. But with Leslie Jones, she came to us. She's always wanted to be a part of this show. Once she became famous, she realized that she could no longer be a contestant on it. It didn't even exist anymore. She found out who owned it. She approached Fremantle. She said, I want to reboot this. They traipsed around town. Everybody wanted to buy it. ABC won, and she is invested fully. Leslie Jones is so much more than the host of this show. It's been an incredible ride.
She's also, Wes, the first female to not only host a show, a game show on ABC, but also be its executive producer. Elizabeth Banks does the same thing also for Press Your Luck. What's it like to work with Leslie as an executive producer, and how is she learning the ropes in that role?
I think what's really great about Leslie as a host and executive producer is she has the ultimate passion for this show, right? And she wants to be involved. You know, I think there's a lot of people who might be an executive producer in title. Leslie Jones is definitely an executive producer in action as well. And what you're going to see, you know, what Leslie is an expert in is comedy and humor and connecting with people, right? So you're going to see a lot more of that in this version of Supermarket Sweep. We've been able to watch her put her Leslie Jones stamp on it since we shot it in August, and it's been a joy to be a part of it.
So, Alicia, on Sunday night, what can people look forward to with this new version of Sweep? It's an hour, which is the first time it's gone from a half-hour show to an hour show. Is it one group of contestants, or is it like Match Game, two half-hours in one, where you have different contestants each half-hour? What's it going to be like?
It's a lot more like Match Game. And so we start the hour with six contestants, obviously three teams of two, just like the old day. And they answer questions at their podium, run through the store for a mini sweep. Then they come back and do the big sweep through the whole store. And then they have a chance for that final, you know, riddle-solving run through the store. Only this time, instead of a $5,000 prize, they can win up to $100,000. And when all of that has happened, we're only halfway through, and then we do it all over again.
Now, explain the $100,000. That's the most that show has ever had in its history. It was, as you mentioned, Alicia, $5,000. At one point, they had also second-chance situations where you could get another $5,000. If you were a contestant, there was like a challenge of champions, that kind of thing. Alicia West meant up to $100,000. How will that work?
How does the end game work?
Yeah. So that you, because Alicia was saying up to $100,000, which sounds like that there's different levels of cash that you can win.
There are, yeah. So we've got basically the goal of the end game is to try and solve and find five products before time runs out. If you find the fifth product, you're going home with $100,000 plus the amount that you had in your shopping cart at the end of the big sweep. So you could have, you know, $102,000 up to $105,000, right? However, along the way, we give you decision points and options to walk away. So if you find the third product and there's still time on the clock, we let you decide if you want to cash out right there for $25,000 or keep shopping to try and find that fourth product. If you find the fourth product, once again, we let you decide if you want to cash out for $50,000 in the Super Sweep or keep shopping, go chase down that fifth product and hopefully win the six-figure payday.
How did both of you, Alicia, come up with this new bonus round? Because it adds more levels to that bonus sweep, and at the same time, it also there's a clock involved, and there's also, as Wes mentioned, decisions along the way.
So it's interesting. There was always a clock involved in the end game of Supermarket Sweep, but it was sort of a very clean, you've got your time, you've got three riddles, and you win a wonderful but fairly small amount of money. Wes and I were tasked with creating a primetime network version of Supermarket Sweep, and the modern-day viewer has a bigger expectation for what they tune into at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. As a result of that, we looked at the old game, which we loved and which we think is perfect, and we didn't want to change it so much that we would ever alienate a fan or ruin it in any way, and we thought, Well, I think the way to blow it up is to increase the amount of money and the stakes. And so I will be honest, the brilliance of it comes from Wes because he has much more of a game background than I do. I have a story background, and together the two of us figured out how game would marry story, and you could have a real emotional connection to the contestants trying to win money.
Isn't that just like the best producing partner you could ever have, Simon? Like, I'm so lucky to be working with this amazing woman, and it was supposed to be a 3-month gig. It became a 10-month gig because of COVID, and I couldn't ask for a better partner. I think the key with the end game and the reason it got bumped up to $5 million is I wanted to have a $100,000 prize, and ABC supported that all the way along because it was going into prime time, right? And so how can we make Supermarket Sweep feel big and prime time and worthy of the slot it was given, and it was to have a $100,000 prize. But if you have someone racing and winning $100,000 after finding 3 riddles, it just didn't feel like they'd done quite enough to earn that money, right? So at 3 riddles, 25 grand felt like an update. 20 years has gone by, 25 grand feels about right. But if you're going to take home our $100,000 prize, we wanted to make you work for it. And I think I won't go in too deep into the kind of the strategy and the decision-making you have to make in those pieces you have to watch on Sunday. But I think as someone like you who loves game shows, you're going to really appreciate the little nuances that happen when they're asked to make those decisions to try and get to the $100,000.
Mm-hmm. We're staying with you. Some of the things that people remember from both Roads of Supermarket Sweep were the games that people played to build up their sweep time, everything from the mini sweep game to the 30-second shootout to which one of these 3 items cost less than $2, that kind of thing. And then when it came to the big sweep itself, they remember the bonuses. They remember the unusual, we have to get the coffee for $100, get the candy for $100, all that. How much of that was retained in the basic game?
I think the spirit of all of that, as someone like myself who had come home from school and watched Supermarket Sweep for 3 hours straight, right next to Shop Till You Drop, the spirit of all of that lives on. I think what you'll see is that with the mini games and certainly the bonuses, what we've done is tried to put a 2020 spin on them, right? So you're still being asked about Supermarket Trivia the whole time. You still have amazing strategic decisions to make when you're running through the aisles with your cart, trying to fill it up. But, for example, we have a lot more graphics in this 2020 version because that's the kind of society we're in right now. So there's a lot more games where you at home get to play along by staring at the same screen that the contestants are playing along with. And when you get to the big sweep and those bonuses, we have the coffee bonus, but we have our own take on it. We have a golden bathroom key that shows up that you have to try and capture. So there's a lot of fun. It's still got the zaniness of Supermarket Sweep, but we put a bit of a 2020 spin on it.
One of the things, Alicia, going to the storytelling side, that made the show so compelling was that you're following all these teams, these 3 teams in this big sweep, and you've had to do a lot of post-production because you had mini cameras following each couple. And it was always interesting with every episode, you had to figure how much time you give to each person's sweep at various points. What's it been like for you and Wes and the other producers to deal with all the post-production? Not just the production of the show, but also the post-production in terms of figuring the storyline of that particular sweep.
But the big sweep is the most fun. And, the big sweep is the reason that this show can't really be live because you've got so many cameras shooting and everything is happening at the same time. And you have to kind of guess as you're going, if you were calling it live, what people are going to be interested to see. And so what we get to do because of post-production and because of the edit is Wes and I look at the cart totals and then we reverse engineer backward so that the audience will feel like they can follow along and understand why the pink team beat the blue team and the blue team beat the yellow team. And this season in 2020, we have what we call a movie bird, which is a jib that has an open 40-foot arm that can sweep over the top of all of the supermarket shelves and get a bird's-eye view of these 3 teams running through the store. We have camera men and women.
The cart
cameras? Yeah. Every supermarket cart has a 360 GoPro attached to it that revolves around and records everything in a 360-degree vision. So the bottom of the cart, the ceiling, all of the shelves that the contestants are grabbing products off of, the face of the contestant as they careen through the store. There's cameramen and women running through with this thing called a Ronin strapped onto their back that makes like a steady cam vision as they chase around these people. It's all live to tape, and it's pretty incredible. It's my favorite sport.
It's an amazing – I've always been –
I think that's
really,
the other thing, Simon. Well, when you see, that's one of the big things that's changed in 2020 that I think you're going to be really, and everyone who watches is going to be really impressed by, is when you see our supermarket in 2020, we built it in an airport hangar out here in Santa Monica, built it from scratch, and boy, was it, it was a lot of work to get it done and to do it right, but when you see this supermarket at 8 o'clock on Sunday, I think you're going to be blown away. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
I've seen some of the clips, West Misha, and they're really dynamite. The way the aisles look, the way people are like running around with those carts, is really incredible. By the way, one of the things that was big about Supermarket Sweep was the announcer's role, because that was the announcer had, whether it was Johnny Gilbert or Randy West in the Lifetime version, they had to announce what was going on. So who's doing it in this case, and how is it like to work with that announcer?
In this
me?
Case, you do it, Lisa. You tell him.
The announcer is Leslie Jones. And I know that's a huge departure from what you were used to from the old version, but one of the things that's interesting about Leslie is that she has a brand on social media where she live watches things that are on TV. And we as audience members feel that even though this woman who is so smart and she's famous and she's successful and she's larger than life, she watches TV the same way we do, and she gets upset with characters when they make the wrong decisions, and she gets excited with characters when they make the right decision on all of her favorite shows. And so we had her kick the security guard in the supermarket out of his booth, and she stares at all of these screens that show her the live feed of the cameras that are covering the big sweep, and she just goes for it and announces the play-by-play with huge amounts of passion as she watches.
And knowing Leslie, because of her ferocious gameplay, I've seen her on other shows from Pyramid to Match Game and so forth, it should be hilarious how she narrates the sweeps.
It is exactly, if you imagine in your head, Simon, how Leslie Jones would narrate a sweep, that's exactly what you're going to get. It's the humor, it's the screaming, it's all of it. She is very passionate, and just like anyone else participating or watching the show, she gets most passionate about the big sweep.
For both of you, you mentioned that the episodes were taped in August, obviously under coronavirus pandemic circumstances. What was it like to pull it together with those circumstances?
A lot of nose flops. Lots of tests. Alicia, you take this one.
I mean, honestly, we were one of the first shows that taped in L.A. after the whole city was shut down for the pandemic. And the shutdown, as horrible as it was for everybody, gave us a whole lot of time to think about how we were going to get this done safely and how we were going to protect our crew and also how we were going to find a way to celebrate life in such a strange circumstance. And so we were on Zoom day in and day out for how long, Wes? 4 months, I think. We were supposed to shoot in March. No, we were supposed to shoot at the start of April. We got shut down in middle March, and we came back at the end of July. And we figured out, in conjunction with a medical consultant firm, how to do it safely. And it meant testing all contestants, testing all crew, waiting for test results to come back, working in PPE, masks, gloves, shields, Purell stations for disinfecting our hands at every turn. The stage was divided into zones, and you would stay within your zone to keep you from interacting with more humans than were absolutely required. And, you know, we had a tremendous amount of success. We shot 10 episodes. We had no incidences. We kept everybody safe and happy. We were overjoyed to be working together after being isolated for so long in our home. Look, it was a little strange to not be able to hug a coworker or give them a pat on the back, or to only be able to see their eyes and not their nose and mouth. And it was kind of the first time any of us had experienced that, because in L.A. we were staying home until then. But it ended up being a real, there was a real feeling of camaraderie. We all had each other's back, and we had to take care of our lives outside of the stage in order to bring our health to the stage. And I couldn't love this film more.
I also think knowing that this was a show we were making, and it had just been released on Netflix right around the time we started production, you could feel that goodwill kind of bubbling up, and knowing that we're going to be providing that new version of Supermarket Sweep, of course it was August at the time, but knowing that it was going to be coming up right after the NBA Finals, like, that made it worth the math all day and the test and all that stuff to create something really special.
Supermarket Sweep, first ever in prime time, first ever hour long every week, and back on ABC. And it is back this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station. Check your local news for where Supermarket Sweep will play in your area on ABC. For more details about the program online, abc.com or abcdo.com. Supermarket Sweep, it's back with Leslie Jones as the host this coming Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station. Alyssa Rossiter, West Coast executive producer of the program with fine folks at Fremantle, and Leslie Jones also has post executive producer. Thank you both very much for coming on. It's been a delight all the way. We got to have you back on soon. I know you have both have wonderful game show and reality show credits, and we didn't get into it this interview, but I'd like to at some point do it. Congratulations on getting the show back off the ground.
Of course.
It's a great long run.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Stay safe.
You too. Hope you take care. Enjoy. Lizzie Rossiter and Wes Cobble from Supermarket Sweep joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up in the next half hour, former network executive and now TV strategist has some things to say about diversity and, yes, even Supermarket Sweep. Steve Levine joins me next after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, spreaker.com, and tuner.com. Together, reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, Tuner Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7, the latest reports of this pandemic from all over the globe, plus podcasts, other rich material. The Coronavirus News Channel, on your way, 24/7, TuneIn Radio at tunein.com. Welcome back to the second half hour of Tomorrow We Tell You Live on Columbus Day 2020. Found out I'm with you live from New York. More great guests coming away in the hour ahead, and we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next guest is someone who has had a lot of experience in the world of television as both an executive with services or involved with services like FX and Game Show Network, as well as Fox. And now he's a TV strategist with diversity a lot on his mind. Joining us live right now from Van Nuys, California, Steve LeBlanc. Steve, thanks so much for coming aboard.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You are coming through loud and clear. And Steve, I understand you have some Supermarket Sweep thoughts.
Oh, I certainly do. I was fascinated to listen to Alyssa and Les. They hired a number of folks that I know personally, and they worked on that project. I worked recently on a COVID set as well, and I got to tell you, to get things accomplished in this environment with all of the pressure and, frankly, the moving targets, you know, during that month of August, just as an example, you know, the networks and the studios had to revisit the types of masks that you could wear legally. When I first started, I was working on Big Brother, and you were allowed to wear valve masks and bandanas. And then when the CDC report came out and said they weren't effective, there was an immediate pivot, and people had to go out, and they were turned away. So, you know, it's incredible what people are doing. I have a family connection to the show as well, and it's a complicated one, but my sister's husband's sister is married to Al Howard's nephew. So they are getting a royalty check from Fremantle. I would hope that Alyssa and Les make it a big one. And I've always had an interest in game shows for people that might know me or know me through you. And I am so looking forward to this. Leslie was fantastic on Pyramid. She is group believer. You know, Leslie started out doing temp work for Game Show Network. I don't know if that's known. So this is not only her comeuppance or her revenge on Supermarket Sweep, but I think it's dare say it's her revenge on GSN.
I think a lot of people are going to like this revival. I've seen some of the clips on life on ABC and other networks who carry the promos. I think people are going to be really delighted with the new version. And as someone who saw both the original version from the 60s and the Lifetime version, Lifetime Tax version, I think people are going to be really, really delighted with this.
Well, I go back as far as remember the Bill Malone version at the food fairs on Long Island, just like you do. And the other thing, and I'm surprised they didn't go into more detail on it, but those 30-year-old reruns that, that Lifetime did were dropped on Netflix this past summer. And during a couple of weeks in the summer, we know that Netflix is the number one source of viewing period, and that's why the broadcast TV ratings are so low. Those 30-year-old reruns, which haven't aired in, 20 years? Were the number one trending show on Netflix in the summer of 2020. I mean, Leslie's show is going to have all the opportunities to do great, but this show has already come back at a level that I don't think even, God rest his soul, Al would have ever predicted.
Two things about Al Howard, by the way. Number one, more people in the game show world should know more about Al Howard. Not only because of the Supermarket Sweep, but because of another series that he did, and he was able to revive
the biggest success
of the century. That's right. The initial one was on NBC with, believe it or not, Jack Kelly, co-star of Maverick, as the original host, and then Joe Raggiola, and then the second version with the late great Jim Perry.
The late great Jim Perry, the version there in that story is that Al, was involved, but by that time Reg Grundy's gotten his hands on it. And for anybody who doesn't know the story of Reg Grundy, who was a brilliant guy, basically the Mark Goodson of Australia, Reg basically would come to the United States, watch shows, and then go back to Australia and rip them off. And he wouldn't pay the original producers the royalties. Because they frankly weren't enforced then. Fremantle, as it existed, 40 years ago as an international distributor, would only get involved with that. So there's videos of Al, of Reg ripping off, let's say, Three on a Match and producing it, and Bob Stewart never got a dime. So all Reg basically did was he, intended to do. I mean, he was doing sale over in the UK since the 70s. Al was getting a royalty, but that time it was Reg's show. I mean, it's still the same show, done, in a much more exotic way. And I think that's what people can expect from Supermarket Sweep. It's a show that evolved from its earlier roots into something bigger.
Yeah. And one more thing about Al, I thought he was a genius. I thought he was a great game show genius and show genius.
Yes.
Is that when cable TV had their very own awards ceremony, the ACE Awards, Supermarket Sweep was the first game show to win a ACE Award as the best cable game show. And I saw I saw the ceremony itself, the Western Cable Show, the final event of the at that time in Anaheim, California. I saw Al and his crew take it. He was very gracious about it, and it was really a wonderful thing to see.
He honestly was a great guy. I met him a couple of times, not through the family, but he was wonderful. But, I hope that Fremantle at least gives us both something, because we've given them an extra 10 minutes of promotion for a show that's already going to do great. So,
well, we will see. Like I said, it starts with Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on ABC stations. By the way, Stevie Bobby has just joined us in our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment for Steve, put the call in or put yourself in the chat room. The call, of course, is 646-652-2906. Steve, you've been around a lot of places in the TV world. Why did you decide to forego being an executive to become a strategist? And what kind of strategy do you do?
Well, Simon, at the risk of being overly honest, let's just say that this was not my choice. We're in obviously a incredibly challenging environment, and companies have been going through lots of changes and reimaginings, and candidly, my situation with Sony was no different. So just happened to dovetail with the pandemic. So, you know, we're having these, you know, situations where people don't even realize that I had left the company. So for anybody who's listening from Sony that doesn't realize I'm no longer working there, hello. But, you know, I've always been a strategist, no matter what the title has been. I mean, I'm fortunate to be a research executive. I've been fortunate to be an acquisitions person. I've been involved as a consultant in previous times. You know, I've been involved in, you know, running television stations and selling television programs. So, you know, what is the core skill set with all of these? And it's strategy. It's, you know, taking raw information, which I know how to, you know, process, which I have lived in the trenches with, and making decisions from it. And I think that is the real role of a successful researcher, is not only to tell you the what, but also tell you the why, and most important, tell you what it means. I've been fortunate to be part of some really great teams that gave me that latitude, and that's what I do best.
We just had Diversity Week last week here in New York and around the country, where I also had events where the TV industry celebrates with or out with diversity. And it seems that we have come a long way, particularly in this year, because what I'm seeing, you can't go a day behind or a day without a new programming service involving a person of color at the helm that's running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, or we're going to have one of those in fact right after you, Melanie Cooper from the newest one, Vaughn TV out of Chicago. You also have more people of color launching production companies. You've got more people of color making production long-term deals with the likes of Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, et cetera. You've got people like Byron Allen and Tyler Perry and so forth really creating new empires. Where do you see diversity right now in the world of TV?
I think you really hit it on the head, Simon. I think it is moving in a necessary way meaningfully, and I think, you know, we don't have to look any further than, you know, certainly in a year of incredible change, the awareness of social causes has accelerated this. But I think there's also a statistical reality to it. I mean, the reality is that, you know, African American audiences, Latinx audiences, LGBTQ audiences, Asian American. I know I'm leaving out a couple of others, but those are all market sectors that are disproportionately large and disproportionately consumers of all content. The average Latinx household is over one person larger than the overall, U.S. average. African Americans and Latinx are disproportionate users of social media. LGBTQs are, even going back to the days of Logo, it was proven that, they have higher income, they have, more disposable income. So I think there are not only social reasons why these, pivots to content and showrunners are happening, but I think there's a statistical reality that the industry needs to be as representative in content and the people behind them that reflect the audience that's consuming it. I would only say that I think, in general, I think those kind of insights don't necessarily have to be limited to the specific experiences of somebody who was us of color. I think, making sure those voices are heard and being heard in the proper context is something that we can all work together on. And frankly, that's something that I aspire to as well.
One example of diversity when it comes to a television series is the Second Coming of One Day at a Time, starred on Netflix, now on Pop TV. In fact, tonight makes its debut on CBS. And TV Botany, who's in our chat room, has this to say about it. He says, it seems One Day at a Time is more of a reimagining than a reboot, which is what Netflix seemed to do with many of its revived and continuing series. Is there a difference between reimagining and a reboot? And what do you think about the diversity of that series and how it is now playing a role with One Day?
I will tell you that you hit upon something that is very near and dear to my heart. And I spent, 4 years very deeply involved with this. Just getting a chance to work with Norman Lear was literally on my bucket list And then, you know, Gloria Calderon-Kellett, who is, you know, the, you know, the voice of this new version, is equally as, you know, wonderful. And I could go on and on and on about the cast and the writers and everything like that. But getting more to your specific question, a reboot is something that is like a Fuller House, or what Peacock is going to be doing with Saved by the Bell, or Punky Brewster, and I know I'm leaving out a few other examples. So it's basically going back to the well, checking up on, it's almost like, you know, going to your high school reunion. You're checking up on the people that you left long ago, and where are they in their current lives? And they've been successful. You know, Fuller House had a great run on Netflix, was one of the first core series. You know, certainly the ones on Peacock are the ones that are going to be leading the charge. But a reimagining has really been the playbook of, let's say, the Leslie Moon, this era of CBS, between Hawaii Five-0 and MacGyver and Magnum. And I know, again, I'm leaving out a couple of others, but those are the three that immediately come to mind that take the DNA of the original ideas and take it to a new era, a new level with new storylines. I would dare say it's probably more borrowed from, like, the comic book environment, where you have, you know, new backstories that are invented, and they've been tremendously successful, certainly on a global basis for, you know, companies like CBS. This is one of the first times that it's been done as a comedy, and Norman was particularly sensitive to it because, look, he's been around longer than all of us. He, you know, I think knew what the common links were between the original version, which still has a great deal of popularity. I know Sony has, you know, dropped it on their YouTube channel. I know that there's a virtual Norman Lear channel on Pluto now. So, you know, I mean, you know, how poignant it is. We're talking about this the week after Eddie Van Halen died. You know, so the original version definitely has its place. But look, it's now a 45-year-old show. You know, the times have changed. Certainly the culture has changed. What Norman did was he said, we have a single mother who is struggling to raise her teenagers. And he took the breadcrumbs of even, you know, making, you know, Alex, who was the Glenn Scarpelli role, you know, and putting that in the name. You know, he took the breadcrumbs of the Schneider, you know, and, you know, it's the landlord, but it's a completely different character. And then there's a point in the Netflix series where you learn a little bit more about this Schneider, and you find out his first name, and it's Pat, and it's a tribute to Pat Harrington. Mackenzie Phillips turns up from time to time as a rehab counselor with Justina Machado. So, you know, you've got all Patty Palmer is one of the producers who was on the original version. There's so many little breadcrumbs for people in our demographic who remember the show fondly. But 2020, it was 2017, and the world is different, and Norman and Gloria and Mike Royce took this and I think made it even better, and just the whole idea of Gloria Estefan doing that original theme, una dia a la vez, and it took me a long time to learn those words, by the way, was incredible. The first time that we heard that in the Sony conference room, we all could not stop dancing. It was amazing. And seeing Gloria, you know, as one of the Tias in one of the Netflix episodes was a joy.
And I have to say, Jesse Machado gives a wonderful performance in the Bonnie Franklin role. And, of course, Rita Moreno, I still am shocked that she has not gotten an Emmy nomination for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy. It's really, really something.
Well, so we see for what it's worth. No, look, you talk about this entire cast. Look, you've named, obviously, the two most prominent ones. But I got to tell you, I mean, we were fortunate enough to be able to go to a lot of live tapings. And frankly, one day when there were studio audiences was one of the few four camera shows that actually did shoot with an audience in L.A., and so, you know, you had this, you know, throwback look to, you know, Norman's Embassy days. But you talk about, let's say, Stephen Topolowski, okay, you know, who's one of the few actors of our time that I can think of that is currently in co-starring roles on two popular series at the same time. He also plays Principal Hall in The Goldbergs. Stephen is absolutely brilliant. He is a teacher. He is beloved. He is fantastic. Todd Grinnell, who plays the Schneider on this role, on this version, is one of the most decent people. He's married to a woman. Her first name is India. I'm going to blank on her last name, but she was a co-star on Veep. She's beautiful. She's brilliant. They have a young child together. The younger cast members, Isabella Gomez, is fantastic, and the LGBTQ community has embraced her so marvelously, and she interacts with them. And Marcel Ruiz, who's, you know, this Alex, you know, it's honestly, it's a brilliant, you know, there's a few other co-stars who have shown up that have, you know, moved on to other roles as well. It's just such a labor of love, and it's led by a living legend. You work on a lot of shows over the course of so many years, but you don't really get a chance to work on a show that's this special and this meaningful to so many important people. And when you see the reactions of, you know, veterans and, you know, again, you know, people, you know, underrepresented, the show has one of the few shows that has a Tran writer on it. And I spent some time with this person, and it was just such a wonderful story. You get the opportunity to be exposed to people that you frankly would not meet in you know, other situations, and you learn that we have a lot more in common than you would think at first blush.
By the way, we don't know yet if One Day at a Time is going to get another season. We know that, as I said, the CBS run is tonight, starts tonight, and we'll see whether CBS, because Pop TV no longer is doing scripted series, which picked up One Day for the current season.
At the risk of stealing anybody's thunder from my former employer, what I think I can guesstimate here is I think that the show's fate will lay in the next 3 weeks. I think there are obviously different bars that have to be set now because, frankly, we're in extremely uncharted times ratings-wise and competition-wise. But I do think that there is a real opportunity here. I know that the studio's committed. I believe the network is committed. I think if there's a respectable performance, I think we could see history here because, you know, this, as you correctly said, this is the first time that a Netflix, a streaming original has successfully translated back to linear television. And it's the first time that those episodes have been put on a broadcast network outlet. And it's Norman's, you know, return with this title to the same network after 36 years. I truly believe that if this show performs respectably, and respectably is not only just the rating, but it's also the impact that it makes, I think there's a darn good chance of history, and I'm personally rooting for all of my friends that are still there.
And there's another option now with CBS All Access becoming a mega service, Paramount Plus next year. That could be an option also in keeping One Day at a Time alive. We'll see. Anyway, TV Bobby, thanks for the question. I have the question coming up. Go ahead, Steve.
Again, I don't want to get too public about this, but you know there are some complications with that based upon the deal with Netflix. But again, what Sony I think has proven time and time again is that they fight for their shows. They resurrect things from the dead or the near dead. It's what they've done since I first came into contact with them in the 2000s. There wouldn't have been a Shield had it not been for Sony. And that's where I really came to know some of these executives for the first time. And so I put nothing past them in terms of possibilities.
By the way, if you have a question or comment for Steve or our ask us coming up, please give us a call, 646-652-296, or use our chat room, Simon Apple's Bro 4 by name. We have another question from TV Bobby when you get to that in a moment. But first, if there's an emphasis you think TV should focus on to expand diversity, because there's a lot of ways to deal with diversity on all sorts of levels, what do you think the priority should be going forward, particularly in 2021, to expand diversity?
I'll be a little controversial here, Simon, and I'm going to throw in an area that I think is increasingly overlooked in terms of diversity that I'm personally being affected by, and I think seriously should be looked at by all the content provided, and that's ages. The streaming platforms do not look at age as an immediate cohort set. I mean, they back into it for the purposes of whatever, you know, AVOD inventory is there and what agencies want. But we've evolved to the point where age is just a number, and it's really more about your buying habits. It's really more about your engagement habits. It's frankly a reflection of where the money really is, and it's age agnostic. And when I experience, and I'm not alone with this, platforms that insist that, you know, if you're over the age of 40 or 50, that you're meaningless because, you know, that's the way that inventory was bought for years, where over 50s were free. That's really short-sighted and really, shooting yourself in the foot. And again, the risk of saying anything publicly, I think all you got to do is look at what happened with Quibi, and you draw your own conclusions for how, you know, being so arrogant about, you know, people who are older is, you know, has hurt them. I think that there needs to be more representation, more inclusion, and frankly, more reality. Okay? The baby boomers of today are not the father knows best generation. We're not the 50 pluses that were buying Geritol when Ted Mack's Amateur Hour was on the air. We are a much more technically diverse. We are a much more aware group. We're livelier. We're living longer. We have third acts and we have fourth acts. And I think it is high time that somebody who is responsible for programming this, particularly because we have money, like to have money, I really think that that is a sector that needs to be included in diversity. I am all for voices of authenticity, and I completely champion all of these efforts. I think we're going to see more efforts in native language. I think we're going to see more efforts in other cultures. I think we've seen already examples of how the matchmaking series, the Indian matchmaking series, is done for Netflix. I think you're going to see a lot more of these subsectors being represented, and I think that those who resonate the most are going to profit from it. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just throw in something else. It's time that we try to get people of color involved in the technology side of television, whether it's forming ventures that would allow certain technology like 5G, interactive television, augmented reality, video chat, tele-education, telemedicine, all sorts of services of the TV set that they can put together, get funding for, get finance for, and operate. By the way, there's an event happening this Wednesday and Friday in Los Angeles called LTX Fest, which is going to try to get Latinos more involved in the technology field. I hope television is part of that, and we're going to be following that very carefully over the next over the course of the week. Before we go, TV Bomby reminded me about this, and I was going to bring this up to you also, and that is that the great game show host Tom Kennedy passed away on Wednesday. He was 93. Steve Beverly, the great game show historian, broke the news last night. Your thoughts about Tom Kennedy and what he contributed to TV?
Oh, Bob, thank you. Tom, it's interesting. I've gotten the chance to know Tom's nephew through some personal connections, Jack Narth's son. And, you know, he always refers to him as Uncle Jim. You know, his real name was Jim Narth Sr. And, we look at him as a TV personality who was beloved. He was diverse. You know, he had a long, long career. I have a personal connection to him because I was on one of his shows called Q back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Remember that one, show. Jay Wilper produced it, yeah.
Oh, I've got stories on Jay that we can share for another time. But in any event, my last 2 years of college were paid for. Tom couldn't have been more pleasant. He was always, whenever I see him at things, he didn't know me from Adam, but he certainly was pleasant about it. I think the thing that I want to just throw out there is, we were talking about this the other day, I think you'd have to be really hard-pressed to come up with two brothers that were as prominent on daytime television schedules at any point in television history. I mean, we were kind of brainstorming, when were there examples of even siblings that were popular. Right? And the only ones we can come up with were Dick and Jerry Van Dyke and Joan Fontaine and Olivia de Havilland. I'm sure there are others. But when you think about the number of half hours that Tom and Jack did in the 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, you know, and they were 5 days a week on broadcast television with three networks with tens of millions of viewers, I don't think you're going to find it certainly in today's world. So his passing, I think, is not only a milestone personally, but I think it's a milestone for this industry that, one other little secret is that, you know, through marriage, Tom Kennedy and Bill Cullen were brothers-in-law.
Yeah, I remember. And I saw the interview that was done. It's on YouTube that he did. I have to, unfortunately, wrap things up. I do want to say about Tom.
Okay.
One of the most virtual game show hosts around. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I mean, look, it just, you know, and look, I mean, we've been looking at, today Joe Morgan passes away. And, you know, how many losses we've seen in baseball in the last, 6 weeks alone. And, you know, when you talk about game show hosts, you know, you can't help but think, you know, Bob Barker is going to be 96. And, you know, we've already lost Monty. You know, obviously we know about Alex and, you know, we pray for him every day. But you just, you know, you look at this and say, you know, mortality is just a function of life. So, you know, if you're a fan of Tom Kennedy's or anything, just, you know, raise a glass to him tonight. I know his family would appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I'm happy that some of his work is on YouTube. Episodes If You Don't Say, episodes of Split Second, I think one of the most underrated game shows ever in history. I'd love to see that revived one more time. Somewhere, somehow. Name that tune, et cetera, to say the least. Wordplay, a lot of great shows. He was one of the most virtual game show hosts around.
Bobby Weinrich, 50 Grand Slam, yep, we can name it.
Not to mention game shows that he got involved with as a substitute and then took over, like It's Your Bet and Password Plus. We could go on and on and on. But, Tom, we will miss you very, very much, and condolences to his family and his millions of followers and many, many friends. And, again, I hope YouTube will find a way to get more of his work on their site. If you want to know more about what Steve does, here's where you go on the web, stevewoodline.com, stevewoodline.com. I promise you it's very much worth the while. Steve, thank you so much for a great half hour. We could go on and on. It's a pleasure. Let's have you back soon. It's been terrific.
Thanks, Simon. I'd love to do it again. Take care, my friend. Thanks for the opportunity.
You too. All the greatest. Take care. Steve O'Brien joining us live from the wonderful town of Van Nuys, California. When we come back, the newest plumbing service on the air is Vaughn TV. We will talk to the person behind it, Melanie Cooper, live from Las Vegas as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to Blog Talk Radio, Speaker.com, TuneIn.com, more than 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for Off the Cuff Radio. Check it out. Music and more tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Off the Cuff Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio. That's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final 30 minutes of our Columbus Day 2020 edition of Tomorrow Be Told. And one of those just joining us at the top of the hour. It's been so much fun so far. You came in at a great time. Simon Abbott with you live from New York, 53 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have questions for our next guest, ring them in 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One of the great cities in media in these United States is Chicago, Illinois, both for radio and for television. So many great shows and so many great people in the TV field on and off camera originated from that very city. Whether it's stations like WGN America, shows like Bozo the Clown, the Dick Wolf Chicago shows, Chicago keeps on popping. And the latest situation is a brand new plumbing service that launched last week called VON.TV. It's available on Roku, soon will be on other smart TV sets and smart devices near you. It's an offshoot of one of the most popular radio stations in that city, WBON. Joining us live from Las Vegas, but based in Chicago, is the chief executive of the company behind Vaughn TV, Midway Broadcasting, Melody Cooper. Melody, thank you so much for being with us.
No, Simon, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to join you today.
It is a pleasure, and it is an honor. First of all, what's been the reaction to the first week or so of Vaughn TV?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's... You know, it's really opened up our world when you think that we're at a station that is legendary in the city of Chicago. Our radio station has been around almost 60 years. And so, you know, what a special way to usher into our future, right? And with a digital streaming network. And so a lot of the listeners, right, they're excited about it, trying to figure out how to get to it. Their young people and their families are joining it. We've got great movies on it. We're off to a great start. I'm so excited about it, you know, that we're able to do a 2.0 with our brand.
And what a 2.0 it is, Mary. This is not a simulcast, a 24/7 simulcast of the station. This is something that is quite ambitious.
Yeah, it is, and very timely, because everywhere I was listening to the last segment, and when you talk about advertising, every time we'd go in front of these agencies, that's their new language, that's the new buzzword, right? Digital, and so we're now in the center of the game with that, and with our own niche, you know. People don't realize this, Simon. WVON is one of those iconic radio brands, not only in Chicago, but in the country. It went on the air in 1963. The call letter stood for the voice of the Negro, right? And so throughout our history, we have just been the voice of black Chicago, right? But known all over the world because the station was so huge back in the 60s and 70s. And so we're taking our secret sauce, and we're taking it to a digital platform. And we started it to show you that we may be on to something, Simon. We started it at the beginning of October with our Urban Heritage Film Series. The reason we've been allowed to remain relevant in a city of like Chicago is because we're very active in the community. And prior to COVID, we'd have these film series, and 400 or 500 people would come out in April, right? So with COVID, we weren't able to deliver that in April, but guess what? We delivered it in October on Vaughn TV. And the beauty of it is, outside of seeing terrific films that ordinarily would not be seen in a global space, we're having post-discussions live on air with the directors and some of the actors of the films, right? And that's special, you know, that's special. You don't see that on TV, and so we're excited to be able to curate it and to bring it, you know, and be so committed and feel so married to our brand and what we do.
Melanie, what is the programming philosophy, in particular the original programming philosophy of this service?
The original program philosophy, I'll share it to you. I read this book. My husband introduced me to this book called The Blue Ocean. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's by two professors, a Chan Kim and a Renee Malburn, right? And they talk about the blue ocean. And the blue ocean, Simon, is simply, in a world of coffee, how did Starbucks find their way, right? And so that is my philosophy with Vaughn TV. In a world of great entertainment on TV from the traditional sources, right, what is that special brand that we're going to bring to consumers that will allow us to stand out? And I'm telling you, I'm not trying to take over the TV world. I think we're in a space of micro sectors. That's what I'm calling them, micro sectors, right? So those individuals who kind of mirror my audience locally, that means intelligent, socially conscious, African Americans mostly. I want to touch them in a special way with programming, whether it's entertainment, meaning live performances, right, and interviews, whether it's – I have a show on Vaughn TV called The Black Foodies. Here's a couple that goes all over the country to African-American-owned restaurants, and they rate them, right? And so ordinarily people may not – you know, you might not find that on traditional TV or your favorite cable network, but you'll be able to find it at Vaughn TV. And so those are the kind of programs that you'll see right now if people go to Vaughn.tv and look at it, or, you know, on all of the different platforms that we're on. But just unique, there's so many independent films that never get attention, that are great films that have to deal with the African-American population. And I want to be able to give young filmmakers and, you know, documentarians a place and space where their work is respected and watched and appreciated.
Melanie Cooper is with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, live from Las Vegas, but she's based in Chicago, and she is the person behind Vaughn.tv. It's one of the newest programming services available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and she is with us live, like I said, this half hour, Columbus Day 2020 on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sorry, I'm with you live from New York, 53 degrees, really, really cool, and a lot of rain today. For those just joining us, we are getting the remnants of Hurricane Delta that pummeled Lake Charles and other parts of Louisiana before the weekend. They're supposed to get out of here, the rain-wise, early tomorrow morning, and then we're going to have a nice, fun Sunday rest of the week. If you have a question or comment for Melody, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04. My name is T.B. Pomney, is still in the room. And coming up before we leave you this half hour, we've got our latest edition of Reboot This. This time around, a CBS historical anthology of the 1960s. It only ran a year, but you can see the episodes on YouTube, and it really should get a comeback in this day and decade. More about the great adventure coming up before the end of the half hour. Melody, how long did it take from the idea of putting this network on the air to getting it on the air?
Oh, wow. I'm so glad you asked that. So I've actually had this signal for a year. And it's a great question to ask a neophyte like me who's just starting out, right? Because when I first got it, you know, you hear so much about millennials, right, Simon? I'm like, okay, let me get some young person in here and figure it out. And I listened to your last conversation. It was so right. I just didn't feel that I was connecting. I didn't understand the marketplace by which people were trying to get me to go in, and it didn't connect for me. So I got back to what I know worked, right? And that's where I kind of found my comfort zone and being able to deliver it. Now, it's still in its infancy stage, so I can't tell you that I know that I've knocked this out the park and there won't be any tweaking. But I found where I was comfortable, you know, and delivered something that I knew worked and that I knew that I could really expand on because I felt it. I felt that it was missing, and there was an opportunity for me. And so yeah, I got it actually in September of 2019, and I got it because I was at the right place at the right time. I was actually testifying at the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, about diversity in ownership, and the executives from the OTT platform was in the audience as I was sharing my experience and how we can move the needle in terms of more inclusion, right, in radio and television. And they liked, you know, what they heard, and they pulled me inside and said, hey, they were looking to add more inclusion to their platform, and if we can make it work, let's make it work. And we were able to do it. And like any entrepreneur, you know, when they brought it to me, I was saying, oh, absolutely, I can do it. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about doing, right? But with a little studying, right, and a little innovation, putting people around me, and just testing the market, you know, talking to people about what was the opportunity. And so here we are today.
I mentioned, I think you're on Roku. What other smart TV sets and devices is your service on at the moment?
It's on Amazon Fire. It's on Apple Plus TV. And, of course, Roku. What we found out, though, Simon, is that most people are consuming us just at Vaughn.tv, which was interesting to me because I was wondering, you know, in a lot of especially African-American households, you do have people who have Roku because a lot of them are coming off cable, but the majority of them don't. You know, they're still at Comcast, Xfinity, or AT&T, you know. And so I was wondering how are we going to transfer audience, and didn't want to cannibalize my radio audience to go to TV, right? And so we've just been testing, and on when we go live for our movie series, most of the feedback we're getting is a result of them watching it at Vaughn.tv.
I mentioned earlier that this year, despite the coronavirus pandemic, we are seeing this incredible tidal wave of new programming services, mostly from independent players, and lately a lot from women and people of color, and women of color, that are getting play on smart TV sets, on smart TV devices, on multicast channels, and so on. And there's more to come, incidentally, that we are hearing about. And
yes,
we're seeing with some of these services that they would like to do both scripted and unscripted television, scripted and unscripted series. When it comes to Vaughn.tv, you mentioned that you want to really give filmmakers and video makers opportunity to get a national platform. Are you hearing them saying, hey, I'd like to do a scripted series for you. I'd like to do an unscripted series for you. We can make it work in terms of budget. What are you telling them at this point? And is Vaughn TV going to be a home for scripted shows at some point, as well as movies?
That's a great question. So I've started this network like a dimmer. Let's use a light switch as my approach. I'm using the dimmer process, and here's why. I didn't start this with deep pockets, right? And so a lot of the content that you'll find there, it's already there. It's already baked. Sure, I would like to get to the point where we're growing and we're able to add scripted programs, original scripted programs. I'll tell you, Simon, maybe 6-7 years ago when this reality TV boom came, they were actually looking at our station for a reality TV show. And it was pitched to Fremantle and some of the other guys. And WVON is one of the few urban talk stations in the country, right? And so here you have, a mix of just how we come together in a very entertaining way, but curating news of the day. But nobody could kind of figure out how to make that work. I'd love to bring it back because I think it has real legs and arms to it. If The Office was a big hit on TV, right, watching black folks in a talk station with all that goes on in the news has got to be hilarious, right? So I'm thinking about things like that. But a lot of this takes money, and I didn't go to a venture capitalist and say, hey, give me $20 million to start this, you know. It started very organically. And so the long answer to your short question is, of course I want to do that, but we're going to grow into that.
Yeah. And on the subject of growth, how are you doing in terms of initially getting commitments from national advertisers?
Just starting that. Really just starting that. But let me tell you, it's a good time, and here's why. I was on a call on Friday. Because we've been in this industry so long, people know us, right? But I have two AM properties, so I've got this like eight. I've got an elephant. I've had an elephant in the world of media in terms of radio, right? And so Vaughn TV is allowing them to take a second look. But let me tell you also why people are taking a second look. It is what you talked about just a minute ago about what's going on in this country, right? This entire year of this social revolution that's happening. And people are now paying attention. They are intentionally looking at African-American content and African-American outlets, African-American-owned outlets, in a different way than they have before. And so as painful as this season has been for many between COVID and a lot of the social unrest, it's also opened the eyes for people to start paying attention to a segment that has been really underserved and overlooked in terms of advertising opportunities at many of these agencies. So, we are starting to get great looks, starting to have great conversations. But, again, I've just been on the air since – I haven't been on the air for a month, right? Got a couple of buys thus far, most of them regional, right? But people are excited about it, and they're excited for us.
Yeah. And two things to think about. One is, number one, Chicago is a great production town. There's a lot of more activity out there than before in terms of TV production. You have the Dick Wolf shows. You have other shows also. You have Milwaukee also, which is the home of John Ridley. I know he's doing a lot of stuff with Milwaukee trying to raise new talent for film and TV.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing that's really critical, too, is that we're seeing a lot of interest, not just with African-American programming, but programming aimed at Latinos, programming aimed at Asian Americans, programming from the lesbian community, programming from Native Americans, indigenous peoples, a disabled community, and so forth. And all these different communities are trying to get their share of this expanding pot and get it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because it should be more reflective of America. That's what makes this country great, is that there's so much diversity that is part of it. And who better to tell our stories than the people who live it, who breathe it, who experience it every day. And that's an authentic story. I get that a lot of time in the advertising community, Simon. People will say, well, if I buy the number one, you know, station that's reaching blacks in Chicago, why do I need a station like VON? And I often tell them, you know, here's why. I explain to them the benefits, that the black community is not monolithic, like general market communities. And that conversation never comes up in the general market. People don't say, if I buy CBS, I can't buy NBC. You understand? And we that is diversity. It's a diversity in audience. And that comes all the way down to the different ethnicities that are reflected in this great country that we live in. And so I really consider, because we've been in this business for so long, I really believe that we are experts in black America. You know, we understand our culture better than most because we've been in it for so long. We've been telling the story of it for so long. And so I'm prepared to do this, excited to do it. It doesn't mean that no one else can't do it and do it great. But I tell you, I don't know anybody who'll do it better. I don't.
Before we go, the TV simulcast has become, or TV radio simulcast has become a fixture of television over the last, let's say, several decades because of what ESPN has done with Mike and Mike in the Morning, then Golis and Wingo,
yeah.
Now the new Keyshawn show that's been running the last couple of weeks on ESPN News and ESPN2. You have Revolt, which has had the Breakfast Club for several years. Are any of your VON radio shows getting a TV simulcast at this point? Are there, if not, any plans to at some point?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we're going to work on that. Our morning show, that'll be the first show that will roll out maybe second quarter of next year. We're getting in gear. But I really want to perfect those things that we're doing now. We've got some original programming coming out with one of our hosts, Simon, who's actually, her show won't be live on VON, but she has a segment, a music segment that's going to be live on VON. And there will be pretty notable artists that will be performing and being interviewed with her. So, again, the dimmer approach to turning this on and up, just excited about it. Friday, people don't realize this, but it's actually the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March, right? We're going to carry that live on VON TV. We're going to replay it in respect of its time that it actually happened. So those kind of things that kind of fall under the radar that are important to us, you know, as a culture, but, you know, may not, you know, be top of mind for many of the networks, I think provides an incredible advantage. And to bring a local show out of Chicago where so much news is made and has such a wide footprint for African Americans, a talk show, you know, in the morning, I think the world is ready for that. I really do. Think about it, Chicago, Barack Obama, Michael Jordan, Oprah, it's great stuff here outside of the things that you often hear come out of Chicago. We are on some very rich soil, and VON TV will show the world that.
The service is VON TV. If you have Apple TV, you have Amazon Fire TV, as well as Roku, it is currently available to you on your smart TV device, other smart TV sets, and smart devices to come down the road. More details about the service online, two places to go. One is VON.TV, and the other is www.gatewaybroadcasting.com. That's the parent company of VON TV and the radio station WVON in Chicago and heard elsewhere around the country and the world. That's www.midwaybroadcasting.com. Melody Cooper, the head of both Midway and VON.TV, thank you again for joining. Congratulations on getting your service off the ground, and I hope we'll be following you and what you're up to for quite a long time.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thanks for what you do in our industry, and let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. You got it, Melody. Anytime.
Take care.
All the greatest.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Melody Cooper from VON.TV and Midway Broadcasting joining us live from Las Vegas, Nevada. Two things before we wrap up for today. First up, a quick personal update. My brother's daughter, Mallory, had a wonderful new baby boy named Landon coming into the world, and I found out about it after we finished up last episode on Friday. Got the word right off the bat from my mom. So Mallory, Gary, Janet, Karen, Alexa, everybody in the family, And Landon, we love you. Saw the Facebook posting with my brother Gary and you all together. A great new person in the world. So Mallory, hubby, et cetera, congratulations. And finally, we have a new edition of our feature we started a couple of weeks ago called Reboot This, where we highlight programs that are only lasted a year or less on network television that we think should come back. First, we had Catchphrase, the game show. Last week, we had Sorry, People on CBS. Well, when that show was on, there was another show. It was on Friday nights in 1963-64 called The Great Adventure. It's still one of the few historical anthology series ever made, and one of the very few, maybe the only one, that was family-friendly. It was all about the great highlights and the sidelights of American history. It had a great bunch of people behind it. John Houseman, the famous actor and entertainment entrepreneur, was the original executive producer. I had Van Heflin as the original narrator. Richard Rodman with great theme music, terrific writing and directing, wonderful stars in every episode, and it also was recommended by the National Cation Association. You can see seven of the episodes on YouTube. Two I recommend in particular. One is Go Down Moses, which until Underground came on WGN America, was the only episodic television program dealing with the birth of the Underground Railroad. Features great performances by Ruby Dee as Harriet Tubman and the late, great Brock Peters as one of her associates. And then another episode called The Special Courage of Captain Pratt with Paul Burke of Naked City and 12 O'Clock High fame. It deals with American Indians who were discriminated and how they found a new life with the Carlisle School, of which came, among other people, a great athlete named Jim Thorpe. Again, these episodes are available at YouTube.com. Check them out. And I think you'll conclude, like I do, that it's high time that The Great Adventure get another shot. It was a wonderful program, given all the special technical knowledge that we have since, including color, that it can be done even better. So how about it, Netflix or History Channel or Hulu or somewhere else? Bring back The Great Adventure. Reboot this. I think you'll really enjoy it. And if you have an idea for Reboot This, I'd like to hear from you. Or if you have an idea about The Great Adventure coming back. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If we use your suggestion on the air, you will get the credit. Maybe even get a prize, too. So keep coming up with your thoughts for Reboot This. We really appreciate it. Again, thank you to everybody who made a guest on this program today. It's been such a delightful 90 minutes. Wish it didn't come to an end, but it is. We'll be back with you on Wednesday and Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. We'll tell you when our guests are on Facebook and Twitter, so stay tuned for that. And by the way, if you have thoughts about the show, please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, at UBCSimonTWBT. And if you want to catch up on episodes in a minute, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check us out on Amazon Music, Apple TV, iTunes, Spreaker, and, of course, the iRadio Podcast Network. Remember, we always communicate with you when you communicate with us. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Block Talk Radio and those previous program. Our production associate is Madeline, Andy Toad's Block Talk Radio General Manager, Jay Sonberg is Head of Content, and the co-founders are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we televise and brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For one or two audio books, plus health and wealth material and more, and a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. For tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great next 48 hours. We are back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Block Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and Amazon Music. And remember, be safe and be great between now and then, and let's lift this pandemic now and forever. And with wonderful respect to David Ruprecht and Bill Malone, I'll say this. Next time you're at a checkout stand, you hear the beep. Take a little of the fun you can have on a supermarket sweep, and tomorrow will be televised. Until next time, stay well, and stay tuned.